Welcome to the August 2015 Ouch Talk Show. I'm Kate Monaghan.
And I'm Shannon Murray.
And this month we come to you direct and exclusive from the City of Angels, Los Angeles. And our studio is crammed with stars. A stellar lineup, you might say, to use a good old Hollywood cliche. We have the RJ Mitty of Breaking Bad, Switched at Birth, and now taking the world's fashion runways by storm.
Reality show Push Girls star and wheelchair hip-hop dancer Autie Angel.
And just what every aspiring entertainer needs, a good and loyal agent. We'll chat with Gail Williamson about finding work for disabled actors, and we meet them all
after a word from our sponsors.
Ouch. Disability Talk from the BBC with Kate Monaghan and Shannon Murray.
So here we are in Los Angeles, a very fancy studio, although it's not quite as big as the one in London, weirdly, which I find odd because I feel like everything else in America is a lot bigger. So being in a slightly smaller studio is odd. And Shannon, is this your first time in a Los Angeles studio?
It is, yes. I've been in a couple of the film and television studios.
But ooh, this is fancy.
Yes, very nice. And this is my first time in a radio studio.
What were you doing in the film and television studios then?
I've been going for a couple of castings, keeping myself busy.
Oh, anything exciting going on? Anything you can report?
I can't report anything because I'm still waiting to hear back.
Oh, okay.
I know, well, sadly.
You know, soon, hopefully. Maybe we'll get the call while we're on air here today.
That would be amazing.
That would be great, wouldn't it?
Breaking news.
Exactly. Now, when we were looking to do the show from LA, we suddenly realised, hello, Shannon Murray, you're already in LA, but why are you here?
I'd just qualified as a lawyer last year and I'd spent the past 10 years juggling law school and acting and everything else that comes with it. And I decided I wanted to take some time out, leave law to one side for a while. I'd done quite a lot of work in the UK and I thought it was time to see what's out here. And also I wanted a lifestyle change. Getting around in a wheelchair in London is not the easiest thing in the world. And when I come out to stay with family out in California, it's so much easier to get around, to be free, to be independent, to be spontaneous. And obviously the beach is only a 20-minute drive away, so that was a big plus.
Of course. But why is it easier then as a wheelchair user?
Things that you would normally have to ask for in the UK, whether it be to have enough room to get your wheelchair through a bar or a restaurant or through a shop. In California, that's automatically there. Disabled toilets with access are automatically in places. I don't have to call in advance and say, are you accessible? Do you have a bathroom I can use? Because here, it's a legal requirement. Though it's funny, I've met a few Californians in wheelchairs who think that the standard is quite low here. Whereas I'm like, no, you haven't been to the UK. You don't understand how bad it is.
That's very true. And the other thing I found is that everybody drives everywhere.
I know.
So, like, I'm really unusual in London because I take my car everywhere and everyone thinks I'm crazy. But out here,
exactly.
I can drive up anywhere and I know there'll be parking because there's parking everywhere. I mean, you might have to pay a fortune for it, but there's definitely going to be parking.
Yeah, I'm the same. And that was a few things that people have said. It's like, oh, you've got to go everywhere in a car. It's like, yeah, I go everywhere by car in London anyway. I can't use
exactly.
Public transport. It's not accessible.
Fit right in.
Exactly. It's just sunnier.
It's true. RJ, how do you find getting around in LA?
No, it all, I think you really need a car. I mean, I've lived in Los Angeles for almost 10 years now. And I have a tendency to get around and travel fairly often. But if you don't have a car in L.A., you're not going to get around. I had a couple of accidents, and I didn't drive for about a year, almost two. And I would walk from Burbank to Hollywood. And there is not...
Oh, my gosh. For anyone who doesn't know that distance, including myself, how far is that?
It's probably... I'd say probably about, here, I'll do kilometers for you.
No, we do miles. We're not European. Yeah. Like, we're not continental Europeans.
Well, I've been traveling in Europe, but it's about, I mean, it's about 3 miles. So it's about a mile up the mountain and a mile down the mountain.
And you walked that?
I did, solid.
That's
and
crazy.
It's almost impossible because there is no sidewalk. So I kind of took a couple of streets.
Gail Williamson, you're with Kazarian Measures, Ruskin and Associates. Did I get all that right?
Yes, you did.
You've been involved in raising the profile of actors with disabilities for over 20 years. That must have had its mixture of highs and lows.
I feel like we're kind of on an upswing at the moment. 20 years ago when I started, I remember saying to an associate, we're going to work our way out of our job to make it so acceptable and common for actors with disabilities to be part of every agency that we're going to make our jobs go away. 20 years later, I'm thinking that maybe it's going to take a little longer. So now I'm actually thinking, oh, I need to like really develop this and get somebody to come on behind me because I want to retire someday.
Sure.
So it's in a good place, but it could be better.
Yeah.
Interesting. We'll come back to talk about that more in a minute. Aughty Angel, you were an entertainer before you became disabled. What were you up to before you became disabled?
Well, I became a professional dancer at an early age of 18. I ended up dancing with NWA on their Straight Out of Compton tour, who happens to have a film coming out in August, this August, called Straight Out of Compton. From there, my career excelled, and I ended up dancing with Milli Vanilli on the Grammys when they got their Grammy.
That's cool.
And LL Cool J on the Grammys as well, just right before my car accident. And I was about to sign a record deal on my way to being J-Lo before J-Lo.
Wow. I feel like I probably missed my calling as a hip-hop dancer before I became disabled. You know, I've got the moves. I'll show you some of them later.
Those were awesome moves right now.
Thanks. Obviously, you can't see it, but I did just, you know, flip some moves right there as we were talking. Anyway, we'll get back to you shortly and maybe learn some hip-hop dance steps when we talk later. I'm very excited about learning some. But if you do like what you're hearing at the moment, which of course you do, out there in social media land, please let us know. You can tweet us at BBC Ouch or send us an email, ouch@bbc.co.uk, or click on Facebook and give us a little like. Now, look around this table, this bunch of talented people here today, and everyone's sort of working in showbiz, so it kind of got me wondering, and this might be a very strange question, so prepare yourselves. If you could take your favourite character from film or television and give them a disability of some kind, so we're talking able-bodied character, and we're going to give them a disability, what would you choose? Who would you choose? And what disability would you give them? Now, I've been thinking about this a lot in the car on the way over here, and I've decided that the person I'd want to give a disability to is Doctor Who, and specifically the 10th Doctor, David Tennant. And I would make him bendy like me. So he is like, you know, super bendy, uses a wheelchair sometimes, but can also hop out of it when necessary. Then the TARDIS would have to be wheelchair accessible, which I think would be pretty awesome. You know, I just say, can we see a disabled Doctor Who? I think that would be cool, right?
Yeah, I mean, the TARDIS always looks pretty accessible to me.
I always think that the door looks a bit too thin.
But you could get a wheelchair through. A couple of inches you could shave off. No problem. Yeah.
And they do have the ramps going down,
exactly.
Actually.
Down
to the console. You can get anything in a room. Just pick up speed.
Yeah, true.
Exactly.
Anyone else got a character they'd like to disable?
I think mine, it's not one particular character because they're all fairly generic, but a Bond girl.
Ooh.
And to add, you know, give a Bond girl a wheelchair. You know, and the amount of spy equipment you could attach to a wheelchair would be mind-blowing. I've thought quite long and hard about
this.
You could have electronic spikes that come out of things. You could have poison underneath it. You could have a flame blower. You could have so many things. And the whole time just looking like, you know, just sweet and innocent in the chair. And then totally take down James Bond. Or the baddies.
Ridiculously heavy.
No, there'd be some titanium. You could, Q would have some stuff that could totally be lightweight titanium.
I would want to be the Bond girl.
Yeah, you see? Exactly.
You look like a Bond girl. I can totally see that happening.
Bond girl for sure.
Well, see, mine would be Bruce Lee. And I would want to make him an amputee and put those really cool blade looking things on his prosthetics.
Oh, that was like the character in Kingsman. She was amazing.
Absolutely. I would want to see him kick some serious butt.
RJ?
I'm trying to think because I always like canes, like someone with like a prosthetic leg and a cane, but I'm trying to see who would best. And for some reason, you know Training Day?
Yes.
Think about it with Denzel Washington with a right prosthetic leg and a cane.
That would be sharp.
Very, very swagger. Yeah. Have that pimp-limp going.
Gail, have you
the
got pimp-limp. Anyone?
You know, I would go for any family show that features a family. I'd want to give one parent a disability. I mean, years ago, Peter Farrelly said, I never read a script that said dad came in the room and he wasn't blind. And I think, you know, I want dad to be blind or deaf. We had that. We had a show for a little while with your RJ. He's JR. Yeah. Simmons played a blind character. Of course, he wasn't blind, but he played a dad who was a blind character. I just think there's a lot of children out there who have parents who have disabilities, and I think it'd be wonderful for them to watch TV and see a family like theirs.
Absolutely. Great idea.
I think we need to send this podcast to some writers out here and just show how badass some of these characters could be if we gave them a disability.
Definitely. Yeah. There's a lot for writers to do. There's so much to play with. Once you throw disability, you've got a whole range of accessories to play with.
You define so much about a person and what they're able to grow from and who they are and having an impact. And I think that's the one thing about having a disability is such an important form of media to show because we don't. And it touches so many people's lives. Mm. And people that see disability on a daily basis, the normality of it.
I think that's why Switched at Birth was such a revelation when that came out, because it's a big, for anyone who doesn't know, in the UK it's a big series out here on NBC on ABC, ABC's
yes.
Family channel, and it's just got a deaf character at its heart, and there's whole scenes of it that are done in American Sign Language with subtitles on, and that's a prime time show out here, and it just normalizes mm-hmm. disability, and people just watch it and accept it, and I don't know why we don't have it in the UK, but I think it's on Netflix, and I would urge people to watch it because it is just a great sort of teen program, isn't it?
Absolutely. Our world is diverse, so I think that television should also include more diversity content. As I had traveled to the UK with my husband for a film premiere that I did with Wings of Legacy, I noticed that out there you guys actually have more diversity on your telly. However, it wasn't wheelchair accessible. We are wheelchair accessible, don't have that much diversity on telly.
Interesting.
Now, for those of you who don't know Roy, Frank, RJ, Mitty. Did I get all that there?
Who is that?
Yeah. There's not going to be anyone who doesn't know.
No, if you don't know who he is, where have you been? And he played Walter Flynn, don't forget the Flynn, White Jr. in AMC's massive hit Breaking Bad. It ran from 2008 to 2013 and was and still is watched by millions. You've since starred in ABC's family primetime hit Switched at Birth that we've just been talking about as a love interest. And you have a film coming out. So let's work our way backwards and tell us about the film first.
I have a few films coming out. I'm shooting one soon. But I think the film you're talking about is Dixieland.
This is right.
And Dixieland is about a guy... fairly blue-collar worker, lives in a trailer park and just doesn't really have much of an outside life. And he goes to jail and he tries to come back and change his life. And I play a character that drags him right back into the mud and, in my own way, end up destroying his life to a degree.
That sounds like a pretty powerful role.
It's awesome. I loved it. I only worked 3 days.
You got a lot done in 3 days.
I got a lot done in 3 days. And no, it was fun. I played a character that really had no disability other than the disability he creates for himself.
You're a disabled person playing a non-disabled person.
Yes.
This is crazy.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That's amazing.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's disability or not. We all have these challenges. We all have these physical things in our life. A disability shouldn't define who you are and what you are. And then I had a conversation not too long ago, actually yesterday before when I was prepping to do this. I was talking about what people see of someone. And the thing is when you see a chair, when you see the crutches, you don't have to play into that. They are themselves. And the mindset we have of people these days is they see that first and they don't see you first. Hmm. And I think that needs to change in that type of thinking. You are trying to live your own life and be you have a disability or not.
So do you think that's what we're sort of working towards, a place where anyone can go to be cast in any role?
I think that's what we're all hoping for. I think that's what we want. That's what everyone should strive to be and to have is not to be cast as the girl in the wheelchair. You were talking about Peter Farrelly earlier. He's a fairly good friend of mine, and I've been on a few panels with him over the last couple of years, and it's not like when he's talking about his casting and how he casts people, it's not he's casting blonde hair, blue eyes, and great walker. He's casting a person. He's casting an entity. He's casting someone that is right for that role, and I think whoever you are, disabled or not, you should be able to get to that role and have access to that role, because that doesn't define you. What you have and who you are doesn't define what you can play as someone else. And our job as actors is not to be us. It's not to be that person that you see of us. It's to be a completely different person that we create for you and for that character and for that world that we're not really in.
I was going to say, this past season, for pilot season, ABC actually came to me and said, would you look at each of our pilots and submit non-traditionally on all of our characters, which I was able to do this year. We didn't end up with anyone being cast, but a lot of people got in to be seen and to meet casting directors and to have another audition and experience that. So it was positive. I'm hoping that, you know, our other networks will come around and look for that kind of input too, maybe in future pilot seasons.
That's amazing that with that casting, that's awesome. With Breaking Bad, it was a fairly open casting, but my character in particular was specifically, they were looking for someone with cerebral palsy because my character is actually based on a real-life person. My character is based on a friend of Vince's, Vince had in college, who had cerebral palsy, who walked with crutches. And he had a general idea of what he wanted and what he wanted to look at and what he wanted to see, so.
Here's a quick clip of RJ in Breaking Bad.
You're late. Again.
There was no hot water. Again.
I have an easy fix for that. You wake up early, and then you get to be the first person in the shower.
I have an idea. How about buy a new hot water heater? How's that idea? For the millionth, billionth time.
You killed Uncle Hank! You killed him! No,
please.
What you did to Mom, you killed Uncle Hank.
Listen to me, you've got to listen to
just
me.
Just shut up.
Just stop it. Stop it.
I don't want anything from you.
I don't.
What the hell is wrong with you? We're a family.
Breaking Bad, you play the son of the main character, Walter White, obviously, and it is based around your family. So tell me a bit about what your own family was like. Was it anything like the family in Breaking Bad? Did you have a dad who...
Did your dad make crystal meth?
Yeah, did he
I plead the fifth. For people that don't know, that's silence. You know, I think this was the one thing about Breaking Bad that people got, I think, the most, is that you could relate to the family even if your dad is not a master meth chef. Because, you know, apart from all the chaos and drama of that world, people are dealing with similar issues. And it's the struggle of having a family and the struggle of leaving your family when you pass. And I think that's something that we could all relate to in one degree or another. I think we're all old enough to understand loss in this room. And I think when you have
because
that...
Because he was driven, for anyone who hasn't watched it, he was driven to... What do we say? Cooking crystal meth. Because he had a terminal cancer diagnosis, yes. Didn't he? And he was worried about leaving you guys.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, most people would be like, oh, it's because of his son. He has a disabled son. And that wasn't really, like, that was never an issue. Like, the thing I loved about Breaking Bad is it wasn't about disability. It was about living a life and having a life and being able to continue to grow and to be a family. And that people haven't seen, he ends up losing all that at the end.
And was that similar to your family?
I know, yes, no, it all depends on the day, you know. I'm one of those people, I feel like I'm more like Walter White than the son, because I've been taking care of my mom and my sister for the past 10 years, 11 years. And I understand that concept of doing what is necessary to provide for their family and my family, and I understand
in
that.
In what way have you been having to look after your mom and your sisters?
I mean, financially, physically, emotionally.
Are you the man of the house? Is that?
I mean, yeah, no. It's my mom was paralyzed for actually 6 years. Well, right after my little sister was born, so she couldn't lift anything more than a loaf of bread. So she couldn't even lift my little sister for the first, like, 4 years of her life.
And how old were you at that point?
I was around 11, 12. But luckily enough, I always grew up working. So I was always able to work and to push and to do what was
necessary. That's a lot of responsibility for an 11 or 12-year-old.
I mean, it's kids are growing up quicker these days, I guess.
But it was that sister of yours who got you the casting, wasn't it?
Essentially, she was the reason why I'm here today and what I'm able to do, because we moved out here because of my little sister. We moved to Los Angeles because she booked a job at like 1.5, not even a half. And an agent saw her and wanted her for a Lucille Ball campaign. And we were like, sure, why not? What's the worst thing that could happen? And the worst thing was we made a career. Well, I made a career out of this, so.
That's a bit harsh on your little sister. She's the one who books the job, and you're the one who becomes a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, she's lucky. I don't recommend this business for anyone, really. It's not an easy world, so.
And aside from the fabulous acting roles that you're having at the minute, you've also been gracing the world's fashion runways.
I've been doing a little strut.
Yeah, a little bit of modelling for Gap's 2014 Lived In Spring, a few fashion weeks. Didn't you do Vivienne Westwood's runway a couple of months ago?
I did my very first runway for Vivienne Westwood, which was amazing.
And how do you feel about fashion and body image? I mean, I modelled for about 15 years, so I mean, I know what it's like backstage, but how did you find it?
Yeah, I love being a part of a crew. I think you can contest to that as well, Angel. I think I really had fun. I really enjoyed it. I like working with people. I like growing with people. I like being a part of the hustle and bustle. And I've said I like fashion. I enjoy good fabrics. I enjoy good leathers. I enjoy.
He's easy on the eyes, girls. Let's just put it that way, because yeah. He just looks amazing. Even in the studio, no sleep early in the morning. Look at you.
Yeah.
Auntie was one of the very first to get into fashion in wheelchairs. And if you look right now, when you go to an Ability Expo, the wheelchairs, the prosthetics, everything is fashionable all of a sudden. Yeah. And Auntie's really a trailblazer in that area. Maybe
Thank
you'd like
you.
To talk about how that came about.
Absolutely. Again, going back to Colors Wheelchair, spelled COLOURS.
The proper way.
Yeah. The proper way. John Box had asked me if I wanted to join the crew, and I looked at their chairs and I said, absolutely, because John Box thought outside of the box and he created these amazing wheelchairs. I told John one time, I said, look, I am dancing for these hip hop artists and I needed a rocking wheelchair, you know. And one day when we were doing a trade show in Florida, he said, I got a surprise for you. And he brought me these wheels and they happened to be spinners.
Wow.
And so what it is a set of wheels with a set of little adaptation on the inside with a little wheel that spins.
Yeah.
Just like the car's wheels back in the day. So I was the very first girl, first person in the world to have a set of spinners on my wheelchair. And I rocked them on stage with Ludacris.
Very cool.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, I kind of want some spinners on my chair now.
Right?
Yeah. I thought I was bad when I had gold rims.
Yeah, again, it goes back to personality. Yeah. You know, if I didn't request it, if you don't request it, then, you know, just stay stagnant. And then you just stay kind of plain and bland, and that's not my flavor.
Mine's the only agent office where you hear somebody say, oh, I love your wheels.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, because before you have an injury and you end up paraplegic, you never in your life think you're going to be excited about wheelchairs and wheelchair accessories and what they can do. But I was at the LA Expo back in February, which to UK listeners is much like Nadex. And you're right, Gail, it's much more about the glamour and the cutting edge and everything's looking sharp and the wheelchairs are pimped out and there's nothing kind of medical looking. It's all very much with personality.
Very different feel than it used to be at those. They used to be something very kind of sad and pitiful to go to, and now it's like going to a circus.
Yes. Shannon, do you think LA is ahead of us in the wheelchair fashion stakes? Do you think the disabled people are rocking it more than we are?
I think so. I think to a certain extent there's a lot more personality injected into chairs out here. I mean, the options are there in the UK as well. Things like, you know, different colours, different metal types, the flashing lights, the spinners. A lot of that is there. But it all depends if you're financing your wheelchair yourself or if it's being financed by the NHS. The NHS aren't going to finance spinners.
I have to quote my girlfriend, Tiffany Adams, from the show Push Girls. She says, it's like going to a shopping mall. It's like a shopping mall for people with disabilities.
Big warehouses. Like I've got a guy that I see for all my wheelchair stuff in the UK. And it is a big warehouse. And I am like a kid in a candy store with wheelchairs. Not something I ever thought I'd be saying 20-odd years ago.
It's crazy to see even motorized. My grandfather was completely paralyzed on the left side. And he had his chair from the 80s and,
wow.
and late 80s. But like the thing weighed almost like 500 pounds and could only have a charge for during like one full day. Now they go for days and do like 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to see the advances that we're making and the confidence that people are having now, because you have people that are afraid to bring attention to their chair and to their crutches, and now they want to deck it out and bring attention and to show people this. And I think we're making great strides in that, of changing a mindset of it's okay to show off who you are and what you have.
Yeah, it's fine to be loud and
we'll
proud.
We'll hear us roar.
RJ, obviously with all this success, you've become a bit of a figurehead for disabled people and a bit of a role model, particularly for those who want to get into showbiz and try and attain the same success as you. How does that make you feel?
I guess lucky. I'm lucky to be in a position that I am. I'm lucky that I've been able to work with amazing organizations for as long as I have. And I mean, I don't ever, like I said this earlier, I don't really recommend this business for anyone. But I think if you love this business and you want to be in this, you should have every right to be in it and uh-huh. to try to throw your hat in the ring. And I think we have a responsibility to bring truth and honesty to our projects and what we are and to what this industry really is, and that is to give people access, to give people knowledge, to give people a experience, to feel something they cannot normally feel without this form of media. And I think that's what we really need to have, and that's what I feel we do have.
Yeah, a lot of people underestimate what we can do, which is always a shame. And that's why I think the importance of film and television is to bring these stories to life.
Right.
Gail, how important has RJ been for actors wanting to get into
the
business?
Well, you know, he's been quite a role model for people. And sometimes actors with disabilities, when they become what RJ's become, they go, well, I don't have to be in that disabled group anymore. I'm going to be over here. No, I'm sorry. I'm not going to give that award at such and such. No, I'm not going to be available for your press conference at such and such, because I now have made it out of the wonderful world of disability and I'm going to stay there.
It's like climbing up the ladder and putting the ladder up behind you.
Yeah. So, and we've had those. You know, we have had those. We've had those that have gone and reformed and realized what they've left behind. But RJ's been really good about doing that.
You are an agent who specifically works with disabled actors. Mm-hmm. And you've been doing this for about 20 years. Why did you get into it?
Kind of backwards. I wasn't really crazy about the industry growing up here in the area where it was active. I mean, I can remember going shopping and being annoyed that, you know, oh, they're filming in that store. I can't go in. That was kind of my feelings towards the entertainment industry. It was kind of a pain in the butt. But my son, who's now 36, has Down syndrome. And when he was 11, he had an opportunity through Special Olympics to be in a Procter & Gamble commercial. So that was Blair's introduction. And then I tried to find him an agent. And that was next to impossible. Although Life Goes On had been on one season, everyone mm-hmm. was saying, which starred Chris Burke as Corky, who had Down syndrome. Everyone said, oh, there's no reason to have an agent. There's nobody looking for anyone with Down syndrome. Mm. And along the way, I found the California Governor's Committee for Employment of People with Disabilities, which was then the Media Access Office. And they were looking for jobs for people who were actors with disabilities in entertainment, because they felt that the more images they put in television and film, the more employment overall. So I volunteered and developed a children's division, went to every kids group, every parent group of kids with disabilities around the LA area, recruited a bunch of kids, got them working, down the line wrote a grant, ended up working with the governor's committee for a total of 12 years. Now at Kazarian Majors Ruskin, I've been there 2 years. But in 2 years, we've made great strides. We have our first series regular this year on NBC. If you saw Graceland this last week, Catherine Crawford, a leg amputee, is on 5 episodes of Graceland. So there's some good things happening.
Fabulous.
What do you think about the trend we've had, which I think we're shifting away from in the UK? I don't know if it's the same here in LA, but of non-disabled actors playing disabled roles.
Oh, we'd love to have that never happen. But
oh, boy.
Oh, it's a big...
We both can talk about this.
Here's where I kind of stand on it. You had better darn well show me you have done your best to try to find an actor with a disability for that role first. That's what I want to see. I want to have seen those breakdowns. I want to know I got my actors in on that audition. I want to know that happened. If the story's going to be told by somebody else, I really like it to be an actor that people will recognize, so they're not going, is that actor really in a wheelchair? Or is that actor really? I'd rather they put someone in there that they go, oh, I know he's not in a wheelchair. How interesting that he's playing this part. Mm-hmm. That's just me personally. Did you say you're going away from it in the
UK? I feel like
think?
In the UK we're getting to a point now where people will ask questions if a non-disabled actor is being a disabled
I think producers get into hot water now.
It still happens, of course.
But. Well, there was a pilot this year that had a wheelchair user in it, and I read the pilot, and I got in touch with the casting director immediately. I have people for this, I got sides out to my clients. I wanted them to read and be ready, and finally, after me calling week after week, when are we going to look at that character? When are we going to look at that character? This is it. We're looking at the character. So my people go in on Thursday and Friday and Monday. And Tuesday, a typical actor has on his IMDb page that he's playing this character.
I have
a feeling. So I feel had now.
Yeah.
They were obviously in negotiations with this guy back last Thursday when they gave me this wonderful opportunity to send in my actors in wheelchairs.
I had an interesting story regarding musical chairs, going back to Susan Seidelman, who directed this. They only casted me, and I was the only one who portrayed an individual with a disability, and the rest were casted able-bodied, portraying somebody with a disability. So I got to consult. So I took them out on the streets of New York in their wheelchairs so that they can get the real experience and not actually feel like they're just going to play a character. When I took them out on the streets, I took them to a souvenir shop, and one door was closed, one door was open. And I asked the gentleman, I said, we would like to come and shop in here. Can you open the other door? And he said, no.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God.
So they got the true experience of what it was like.
So they didn't then chain themselves to the door so no one could get in? You didn't have a protest right there?
No, we didn't have a protest right there. I mean, it gave them that real experience. And I said, you have to portray our community. If you're going to be an able-bodied person portraying somebody with a disability, I want you to rock it the right way.
And that's the perfect way to do it, because people do need to see the inside of what life is actually like.
Absolutely.
And in the UK at the moment, the BBC is actually running a disability season, which is 15 programmes that are going to be shown over the next 3 weeks, which are going to shine a spotlight on some of the singular issues of disability, like people having to fight to retain custody of their children, some of the difficulties they face when they're trying to employ personal assistance, and also disability hate crime, which has been rising in the UK, sadly. I mean, what do you guys think about having a disability season? Is there anything like that on US television?
We have very special episodes. That's what we have.
I think, the disability season has been big in the UK, amazingly. You know, it feels trite to have a 3 week period where we show lots of documentaries about disability. But they have been going crazy. Like, you know, the boy who had his leg cut off, it was the highest rated digital program. They're winning the ratings. They're getting critical acclaim.
And that's the bottom line.
How do we get that?
Because production
are obsessed with ratings. And this shows the bottom line is it gets ratings. And this is similar to the Oscars. When people say there isn't actually a thirst or a hunger for disability on screen. Well, I argue if you look back at the amount of Oscar-winning films, so many of them feature a disability. They don't feature a disabled actor, but they feature a disability, whether it's Born on the 4th of July, Theory of Everything, Rain Man, Forrest Gump. So there is a thirst for disability.
But this is the thing, is taking, and there's such this hunger for actuality in real life and honesty in these characters. But the thing about it is it takes so long for these studio heads to get that disability is lucrative.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all it gets down to. It doesn't matter if people want it. It doesn't matter if they... It could be people want it, but they like, no, this is actually what's selling right now.
Yeah.
That's what they're going for.
I think one of the things that people are talking about in the UK is should disability be pigeonholed into a season? So we have 3 weeks worth of programmes, which are all documentary or drama about disability, And then is it disabilities done? Like, we don't need to worry about disability for the next year or two?
It's just a good start. It's kind of a litmus test to see, you know, what's going...
It gets the conversation started.
I think the UK, though, has understand. I've been working with Scope and quite a few other different organizations. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
In the UK, and the one thing I've noticed about the UK versus the United States is that the United Kingdom has realized that market for... honesty and actuality, and they see that the potential it has and the how lucrative that business is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing is that they have beaten us to that market.
I agree. ESPN right now is featuring the Special Olympics because we have the World Special Olympics here in Los Angeles, and they're doing a lot of coverage. Well, they also covered the Paralympics. I think ESPN gets it, and they've been doing little vignettes for years, their little stories.
ESPN got beat by the Brits, actually, to that race a couple of years ago.
Of course. I mean, the Guardian, which is, you know, a big publication in the UK, they were really down on the season. They thought the whole season was going to be trite, that it wasn't worth doing. And then they watched the programmes and they've totally gone back on that and said, you know, actually, these programmes are real. They're looking at life. They're not scandalising. They're not just for ratings. It's real issues about sex, about love, about carers, about hate crime, all of this kind of stuff. And it does seem to be changing attitudes. So worthwhile, Shannon?
I think so. I mean, there are times when I feel conflicted, particularly not so much with the BBC Three season, but sometimes when you have the titles and they're like a tabloid splash. And then it's always showing the disabled person as a subject, almost like they're under a microscope. I think...
Sort of Channel 5 documentary.
Yeah, exactly, which, you know, I like to...
The woman whose head fell off or
whatever. Stay away from.
Yeah.
But what I think it does do is it shows disability on screen. It normalises disability. It doesn't patronise the contributors. But I think what we need to move closer towards is where disability is on screen and it's no biggie. So, I mean, I think at the moment, both Coronation Street and EastEnders are doing brilliant work with Sherilee Houston and Lisa Hammond. They're on screen, they're regular characters. The disability is rarely referred to. That's how it should be. The same with Liz Carr and Silent Witness.
Absolutely.
It's strong, bold characters than just always being entertainment and reality shows.
Well, all these films will be on the iPlayer for you for the next month or so.
Gail, so this week, as those of us in the room know, this is the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. How do you think that legislation has actually helped actors with disabilities?
It's been the one thing that's kind of unified all the people with disabilities. We've always been kind of our separate little groups. I mean, here in the U.S., there's two blind groups, and they don't always get along on things. And there's two deaf groups, and the national, they don't always get along. And there's, you know, this is kind of what happens. The ADA, because it was written for everyone, kind of brought that unity. And for years, I've been saying that walking into a room with people with disabilities and saying, okay, we're all going to do this, is very similar to walking into the cantina scene in Star Wars and saying, okay, guys, we're all going to go do this. That's not going to happen. But I think the ADA has given us something to focus on to bring us together. And I think also the ADA has brought universal design to us, where we've found people who are non-disabled are able to take advantage of some of the things that have been created. Curb cuts. I mean, great. Now everybody in wheelchairs can get around, and women with strollers and me with my rolling briefcase, we all have access too. So I think we're starting to see that the ADA makes it a better world for all of us at whatever need or
beneficial
we have.
To all walks of life.
Yeah.
To commemorate ADA 25, as the anniversary has been dubbed, there have been events going on all over the country, like a big Crip Fest. I think Matt Fraser was heading up in New York. And I went to one of the events on Venice Beach last weekend, which was a wheelchair BMX skate competition. And here's a bit of a recording I did while I was out there. It is incredible. There are so many awesome people here who are in wheelchairs, and they are doing like skate park stuff. They're like all on ramps. It's loads of people, all kinds of ages, from like, I think I've seen like a 5-year-old going down these huge ramps all the way up to like a 30, kind of my age. They're doing like the most incredible tricks. There's like a huge crowd of people watching everything that's going on. And probably the best wheelchair BMXer in the world is here. He's called Wheels. He's like getting, the crowd is so behind him. He's getting like flips and twists and
you know, like backflips in his chair. I'm just hiding from the wind at the moment. But I'm going to go back in there and just talk to some of the people who are there and find out why they're here and what's so great about it. But I am having a ball. Hey, what's your name?
Jamie.
And how old are you, Jamie?
I'm 10.
And why are you here?
So I can skate.
And what's your disability?
I have spina bifida.
So have you met Wheels?
Yeah.
And what's he like?
He's really cool. He's a chill and cool dude.
Yeah?
He's the one that started all of it, and if I didn't know who he was, I don't know what I would do.
And where do you skate?
I live in Utah, so I skate in Utah.
And you're here, why are you here?
So I can skate with all my friends and I can learn and gradually get better at skating.
Amazing, thank you so much. So now we're on to the adaptive side of the competition, which is for people who have got like prosthetic legs or no arms, whatever. One guy just skated who was actually really impressive, and he only had one arm and two prosthetic legs. And he was, he was pretty good. I mean, there's a couple of guys here who are rubbish, really bad skaters, and they keep wiping out all the time. But you've got to respect them for being here and at least giving it a whirl and getting back up again. And the competitors here have come from all over America. There's people from Texas, from Florida. I've met just so many different people. And the atmosphere here is electric. Like, everyone is just so excited. And people from all over California have come here to watch it today. There's definitely somewhere where disability is celebrated. And you're definitely an outsider if you don't have a disability. So how was that?
Oh, that was fun. It's crazy that I was able to get the best Rail Jam award, and I'm amazed because I didn't think I was really going to do that well because it's a new chair and I haven't done many grinds on this one, but somehow I was able to pull some tricks out and be able to, you know, roll away with first in the Rail Jam, so I'm really pumped.
And how's today been generally?
Today's been awesome. It's been such an inspirational, such a, you know, fun day with just people out here on their chairs just pushing their limits and doing what they can. It's been an awesome day.
And what's it been like with the kids?
It's been really fun because these kids are just fearless and, you know, having them out here just pushing their limits and having fun. And mainly for me, it's just important that they see the wheelchair as an, you know, opportunity, something fun. Because a lot of people think of the wheelchair as a dead end, but, you know, these kids, you know, you ask any of them and they love their wheelchair, and that's my goal. Cool? Is that good?
And that was Wheels there at the end, who, if you keep your eye on the Ouch blog, we will have a film featuring him out in the next month or so. So keep your eyes peeled for that one, because he is amazing and you need to see it to believe it, the stuff that he can do in his chair.
That's my little brother, Aaron Farthingham.
It is.
I've known him ever since he was so little and he's always been fearless.
So, Audie, would you do wheelchair BMXing? Have you given it a go?
I think I've tried a stunt not too long ago where I broke my pelvis, so I'm not sure that it's going to happen. I'm not sure. But, I mean, I'm still fearless. I'm balls out and would go for it. I mean, I've went skydiving before. I love skiing, snow skiing, and catching air. I actually did an episode on Push Girls where we went skiing, and I caught air, and it was the most exhilarating thing ever. So, you know what? Why not? Give me some elbow pads, a helmet, and some other things that I need to protect myself, and I'm out there.
Now, we know that you're known for the wheelchair hip-hop dancing. Are there many other people doing that out here?
There are now. When I first started back in 1992, when I got injured, there was nobody. Uh-huh. So I basically pioneered the movement of wheelchair hip-hop dancing. Since then, we danced with Ludacris on the Vibe Music Awards, and then I met Chelsea Hill. I want to say 9 months post after her accident, she approached me and said the same thing. I love what you do. I used to be a dancer, told her the same thing. Mia Shaikowitz, who is also on Push Girls, was my dance partner at the time. I said, we're having dance rehearsal. Would you like to come and check it out? She came and checked it out. I said, why don't you show me some of your moves and what you do? Because she told me she was a dancer.
Yeah.
And she had danced on dance teams before. And when I saw her move, I said, okay, I know she's got some skills to be able to do this. And then I immediately asked her, do you want to join the dance crew? And she did. And we danced for a short period of time. And then we broke off and she started her own dance team, which I am so proud of her. And I've noticed online that there are more, that the movement has spread. So I'm a proud mama looking at all of these young, amazing newcomers and watching them do new amazing things, you know, that I haven't even thought of trying to do. And it's really accelerated to levels of beyond my expectations.
Yeah, because I mean, that success has brought you the role in Musical Chairs in 2011.
Yes.
The Sundance show that we've mentioned, Push Girls, which for those of you who haven't seen it, it's brilliant. It's five women wheelchair users living in LA in 2013. Did you enjoy shooting that and how true to life was it?
It was very true to life. There was a price to pay because, as RJ was saying, that it's when you develop a character, you're portraying a character, you get to take that coat off at the end of the day. But when you're doing reality, you don't get to take that coat off. You know, walk around and people are like, I know you. They come up to you, hey, Auntie, I know you. I know your story. And basically, they do because it is pretty much true to life.
Because it included your difficulties about trying to become a mother as well, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And at this age, you know, my husband and I are still trying.
Yeah.
There are still difficulties. The insurance doesn't cover in vitro, which is the next level that we are going to attempt. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work, then, hey, adoption. But we are still trying. But there are amazing young women out there who have children and who are in wheelchairs. And I think maybe it's just either my timing or my age might be a factor. We don't know. But yes, I did put that on the table along with going to marriage counseling.
Wow. And is it difficult to put your life under the microscope like that? I mean, was there any accusations that you were exploiting your disability or was it just something to do to fun?
From fans, we got both sides. From the able-bodied community, we got, oh, wow, really? They're taking reality TV that far to, you know, expose women in wheelchairs and their lifestyles. Oh my gosh, what has reality TV come to? And then even from our own community, we got, that's not reality. That not all of us look like that. Not all of us can move like that.
And but reality is different for everyone. Everybody. Nobody is saying it's 100% representation when somebody does a reality show.
And every time I had an interview, I said, you know what we're doing is we are representing ourselves to the best capability in hopes that it will bring awareness to our community. We can't represent the whole community as a whole, but we want to do our best to make a movement and bring awareness, showing that we are people first so that we can break that stigma, so we can break those stereotypes of, oh, poor you, and, you know, you're not able to do this. To be honest with you, I wasn't always in a wheelchair, and I joined the community. So once my perception prior to my car accident was, poor you. Mm. Oh, my gosh, that poor guy in a wheelchair. Yeah. Maybe he needs some help. But once I joined the community, I was like, oh, my gosh, they are so much smarter than me. They could do so many things. And this is such an awesome community. And I was proud and honored to be a part of it.
Okay, so Auti, I'm very excited about this. I just would love you to show me a move that I could do in my chair to make me look like an awesome hip hop dancer.
Fingers apart.
Fingers apart.
Ready?
Okay.
Wave.
I can't get the move together.
Same move.
Same move. Oh, okay. I'm hitting the microphone.
Forward. Hey, you got this. You got this. Look at you, girl.
Nailed
around
it.
The head.
Around
now,
the head. Shannon, come on. You can do it.
I can do it with one leg in the air.
Right. Come on.
All right. Ready? Everybody together.
Okay. Let's all do it together. Okay, everyone in the studio.
But you have to bring attitude. Number. What brings hip hop to it is attitude.
Okay. Right. I need the attitude.
So you could do it like this, right?
Or
you could do.
Okay. And I want everyone in the studio in London doing the same thing. Right. Off we go. Attitude
come
in the
on.
Face, everybody.
Come on, girl.
Looking mean.
Wave, girl.
Looking mean.
Wave,
looking mean in the face. Around the head.
Look at her face.
She's totally nailing this.
Oh, you are joining the dance crew, girl.
You've got another one on the squad.
I do.
I'm now throwing
I
my
do.
Own shame.
Right. Oh, oh, what? What?
Oh, yes.
Boom. Loving it.
Boom.
And like we say, bam.
Oh, sorry, bam in America. Yes. I go the boom, but you go the bam.
Yeah, boom and bam.
Nice. Oh, blimey. I think after all that excitement, I think we need to calm down with a question. So, Auti.
Yes.
Where does your heart lie now? Because you're an actor, you're a dancer, you're a model. Which one do you think, what's going to lead you to the biggest success, do you think? And if you had to choose just one, which would you choose?
I am going to be the next Oprah.
Ooh, nice.
Bam.
You put it out there.
I like it.
Shooting for the stars, and I think you're going to get
there. Yeah, I'm claiming it. I don't want that type of fame and fortune for self-recognition. I want it to be able to have those type of resources so I can help others fulfill their dreams and ambitions. But I do have to put a plug out there. I am releasing an album. So music is going to be my first catalyst.
So, and RJ, what's next for you?
Whatever hires me. Whatever keeps the lights turned on, I guess. August 25th. I should be somewhere either in Nashville or Louisiana shooting a movie. But working, keep pushing forward. I think in this industry, you can't just do one thing, one type of aspect, one type of role. We have to continue to be diverse and push what we are and who we are to different elevations and with each other work together. And I do music. I don't really do music. I'm learning. Learning some stuff.
We're gonna have to do a song together.
Yeah, I DJ a little bit.
What?
So we'll see how that turns out. But
so you've got a lot of irons in that fire then.
Absolutely.
I have so many irons and they're starting to melt.
Right, I've got a few quick fire questions for you now because we put a shout out on Twitter with the hashtag AskRJ, and so I've got some questions that listeners have put to you, and I'm just wanting your quick-fire responses to them. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Mike Mills asks, what's your favourite place to hang out in Albuquerque?
Tureen, hookah.
Nice. Gold Connect wants to know whether you do a spin-off where Walter Jr. goes bad.
That'd be fun. I could be a gangster.
Just pack up the RV, get going.
And the final one, which I think is your least favourite question of all time, Lloyd Harris wants to know, do you actually enjoy breakfast as much as was portrayed on Breaking Bad?
Yes and no. I'm a baking guy, so that's about it when it comes to breakfast.
Amazing. Well, that's us done for another month. Our thanks to all of our wonderful guests this month, Autie Angel, Gail Williamson and RJ Mitty. As always, we'd love to hear your views and thoughts, so please do get in touch with us via Twitter at BBCOuch or via email at ouch@bbc.co.uk. Our special thanks to the lovely folks here at NPR West in Culver City in LA, who've made us feel very at home, and to the team back in London. Haha, you're still in London and it's cold and we're in LA and it's not. Kathleen Hawkins, Martin Appleby, Giles Wilson and today's producer Lee Kumutat, and of course my wonderful guest presenter Shannon Murray. I hope you've enjoyed it.
I've loved it. Thank you very much for having me.
And to play us out today, here's LA based band Mendenhall Experiment with Shout Out. Goodbye.
Bye.